Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Great to have you here as always. Now today we're going to be having a conversation about emotional intelligence. And what I've learned about emotional intelligence is that we use that phrase a lot, but I'm not sure whether we really unpack it enough to understand it and how to apply it and how to get the most out of ourselves and of others. So in our conversation today, I'm joined by Christopher D. Connors. And Christopher Connors is a best-selling author. He's written a couple books. The first one is called Emotional Intelligence for the Modern Leader, and the second one is called The Value of You. Now, Chris and his work have featured in a ton of media publications, including CNBC, World Economic Forum, Virgin Media, Thrive Global, and Medium. He's been on TV and radio as well, including ABC TV in the United States, Fox, and Sirius XM Radio. So Chris is regarded as a real leader in this space. He's done a lot of work over a number of years to really learn, study, and apply the topic of emotional intelligence. And he helps lots of other people apply it in their own lives for great outcomes as well. So in our conversation, we talked about a ton of stuff. It's really practical, really thoughtful as well. But we spoke about, you know, what is emotional intelligence? Can it be learned, or is it something we're just born with or not born with? What are the skills that we as leaders need to master so we can have thriving teams and great relationships, not just with our team members, but our patients, as well as in our personal lives? We spoke about a couple of practices that you can engage in to really increase your self-awareness and self-regulation. All of these things really lead into being emotionally intelligent on a day-to-day basis. So that, as I said, as you go through life, you're encouraging the formation of great, productive relationships, which, of course, leads to wonderful outcomes in life. So, again, really practical information in there. And if you want to find out more about Chris and his work, head across to his website, which, of course, is www.chrisdconnors.com. And, of course, you can find him on the social media platforms as well, LinkedIn and, of course, Medium as well. I'd really encourage you to have a pen and paper handy for this conversation. Tons of stuff coming your way. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you find it useful and let me know how you go with it. Can't wait to hear from you. Here's Chris. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How are you today and how are things in Charleston, South Carolina?
Doing great. Thank you very much for having me, Jesse. I really appreciate it and it's great to be here with you.
Now, we were talking off air about where you live in Charleston. And obviously, Charleston is a beautiful city. It's on the coastline down south, heading down towards Florida way. And our audience, some will be from the United States, but there's a lot of people tuning in from around the world, particularly in Australia. And I'm wondering, before we get into the emotional intelligence, which is obviously what you're really known for, I'm curious to ask you about South Carolina and living there. You live in a beautiful, warm climate. You've got alligators as your neighbors. Tell us what that's like.
My goodness. Yeah, it's a fact of life here. We live in a beautiful community and just, I'd say maybe, I don't know, not too far, 1,000, 2,000 feet down the road, there's a pond and there could be alligators out there sunning at this time of the year during their mating season. So a fact of life in the low country here, as they call this area, this part of South Carolina. So, but a beautiful place to live, very lucky to be so close to the ocean and a great place to raise a family too.
Oh, fantastic. It sounds absolutely picturesque. And as I was mentioning earlier, in my research, I found out that the first ever golf club in the United States was formed in Charleston. So it's very picturesque and really beautiful. And I think all of us should try and come and have a visit. Now, you've written a couple of books, Emotional Intelligence for the Modern Leader and the other book, The Value of You. And I guess I wanted to ask you, when it comes to writing a book, as someone who's written a book as well, I know how much effort and energy goes into writing a book. And usually people write because there's something that's on their mind or there's a problem that they see or there's something, you know, that they want to get off their chest. I'm curious to ask you, from your perspective,
What was it that was on your mind, or what was it you really wanted to kind of say to the world when you sat down to write your books?
A really great question. For me, it was deeply personal. I think I had very actively started blogging about 5 or 6 years ago. And I think that at that time, I was distilling down a lot of thoughts that I had had from earlier in my life, throughout my business career, just as a person of the world. So my first book was largely about core values, building a foundation for personal and professional development. And I think really building a foundation for life, you know, for me, it was so much of the way that I saw my happiness, fulfillment, and success came from having a solid foundation of values, really understanding myself deeper in terms of self-awareness, understanding purpose and goals and things like that. And I think that that journey for me and a lot of the writing that I had done in that space led me a little bit more to further explore emotional intelligence. I learned a lot about it in my business career and felt that, you know, I'd been kindly complimented in certain instances on having a higher EQ in terms of how I related to folks, both internally and externally in the different organizations that I worked in. So, you know, for me, EQ was a topic, emotional intelligence was a topic that I just kept researching and living and breathing each day. And so, you know, the second opportunity for me to write a book was one where I really wanted to kind of give that gift in more of a professional context, in terms of actually breaking down what emotional intelligence actually is, why it matters, and more importantly, how to use it to your advantage.
Thank you for that. You've given me a wonderful segue. As an interviewer, I love a good segue. I can assure you of that. And the thing that I wanted to just, I guess, begin our conversation with is we all use the word emotional intelligence or EQ, and we use it so conversationally, almost very casually, that we can assume that we know actually what it is. And I would really like to just not assume that at the beginning of our conversation. So I'm wondering if you could take a moment to discuss what emotional intelligence is, what EQ is, how do we develop it? Is it a nature-nurture thing? Are we kind of born emotionally intelligent, or is it a skill like others that we can enhance and develop over time?
Sure. So I use the definition that came from Dr. John D. Mayer and Dr. Peter Salove. Some of the audience might know who Dr. Peter Salovey, he's the current president of Yale University. And really, they were the ones that put forward the definition that kind of stuck for a while, really leading up to the book that Daniel Goleman wrote. So that definition is the ability to recognize, understand, and manage our emotions, and the ability to recognize, understand, and then influence the emotions of other people. And so that's really the short and sweet definition of it. And so that to me is really what it is, right? In terms of skill, so to me, emotional intelligence on the whole, it's an aggregate of a number of different things, but it is absolutely a skill set that all of us can acquire and all of us can improve upon. And so I've really, you know, in my book and beyond, I've relied on the research of a lot of the titans of the field going back, you know, 25, 30 years, and ultimately, Dr. Travis Bradbury, who's one of the more well-known authors and academics on the subject, you know, research that he found through his own company showed that out of a series of 33 workplace skills, out of all of the ones that were identified, researched, and surveyed, emotional intelligence was identified as the top skill to help for enduring workplace success. And so as it pertains to when we think about business or we think about a dental practice, Jesse, for example, that in many instances, it's not, you know, emotional intelligence is not what's going to get you in the seat. It's not, you know, necessarily what's going to get you hired, but in many instances, it's going to be what keeps you there. And so that's the message that I try to deliver, you know, in conferences and workshops and to different businesses, is that in many instances, it's our IQ that puts us there, but it's the EQ for enduring success. It's the number one workplace skill over the long haul of what gets people further along in their career, build relationships, helps how we communicate, things like that.
I love that delineation between IQ getting you in the seat and EQ perhaps keeping you in the seat. And I think what I'd really like to explore with you today is around leadership to start with. Obviously, we'll talk about lots of different things, but one of the things that most business owners, whether they be small, medium, or large business owners, will struggle with at some point or another is human-to-human interaction. It's also the most rewarding part of any job or most rewarding part of any life skill or life experience, but it is also fraught fraught with challenge, fraught with uncertainty, and so on. So what I wanted to ask you around that, as we think about leaders and building teams, and if for our audience who want to grow their business, scale up, that's going to involve them developing their leadership and building a team, what sort of things should they be on the lookout for? What are the telltale signs if they're kind of getting it right? But equally, what are the telltale signs if they're not getting it right and there's some work to be done?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. So let me kind of go through it in the way that I often speak to it. I use an acronym. I say connecting the cord. And so for me, I'm looking for four things typically in terms of how EQ really manifests itself in terms of a situation like that. It's how we communicate. It's how we build, you know, how we identify opportunities or create opportunities or see the opportunity in situations, how we build relationships, and how we make decisions. I know there will be further time for this, but I'll also just kind of share earlier on in the audience. So when we think of emotional intelligence as well, we think of it through five pillars, typically, which was really what was defined by Daniel Goleman when he first wrote his book, Emotional Intelligence. So social skill. So social skill is really the aggregate of all of the other parts of what emotional intelligence is. It's how we communicate. It's the nuances of how we build relationships and communicate with others. It's empathy, motivation, self-awareness, and then self-management or self-regulation is what you'll see it sometimes referred to as. And so I think going back to the CORD acronym, in order to be a great communicator, we typically, you know, by nature, sometimes we think, well, it's what we say. It's the words we say. How we try to connect with somebody through our words. But I'm always quick to point out, say, no. Communications actually begins in how we listen. Mm-hmm. The art of being a great communicator is truly being a great listener. It's understanding the needs and the wants of the people that you lead. It's using empathy to our advantage. And so for some people, even, you know, I know that people can think emotional intelligence is a buzzword. I even referred to that in the beginning of my book. I said, it's not a buzzword. I mean, this is actually a legitimate real skill set that we can use. And so, you know, some people hear empathy a lot these days and say, well, what does that even mean? And I say it's listening. It's listening. And it's truly putting ourselves in the shoes of somebody else and either taking their position, taking on the feelings and the emotions that they have, we're just genuinely connecting with them, empathizing with them, and basically saying, I hear you, I feel you, I'm with you. And so when you think about how powerful that can actually be in a business context, if you're building a practice, if you're trying to connect not just with your employees, but with your customers, be quick to listen. First listen, and then you'll be able to get through and connect and identify with people better in terms of the actual words you have to say.
I really appreciate, and there's obviously that wonderful saying from years ago. I can't remember who said it, but I'm going to horribly misattribute whoever it is. But we've got two ears and one mouth, and we should use them in that proportion. So clearly, the ability to listen is really important. And one of my mentors always said to me as I was developing my clinical skills is, you know, you want to hear every word, you want to hear everything, you know, what's not said, but you want to hear so that it shows as well. And so I wondered, as you go through the listening process, because listening is a skill, it is an art, and it is in today's world where people seem to talk a lot and listen a bit less. Perhaps that's my own value judgment coming through there. But in any event, I'm curious to ask you, how do you become a better listener?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's really just start by listening. I think someone asked me one time, how did you write a book, or what is the secret to writing? And I often cite one of my favorite movies. Was a movie came out about 20 years ago with Sean Connery called Finding Forrester. And he said in the movie, he said, the secret to writing is to begin to write. It's to stop thinking and just write. And I honestly think of listening in the same way. I don't think, you know, I think sometimes we overcomplicate things. It's to simplify it and boil it down. It's kind of zipping our own lip, you know, zipping our mouths and just being there, actively engaging in listening to the words that someone else is saying. But, you know, you brought up a really brilliant point, which I think is also another part of listening in a way, if you will, it's understanding someone's body language. Mm. It's recognizing, as I kind of gave to you in the definition of emotional intelligence, is it's the ability to recognize, understand, and manage our emotions, but it's the ability to recognize and understand someone else's and then influence them in terms of positivity, in terms of connection, of letting them know that we're genuinely interested in them. And that's, you know, I think there are altruism and altruistic elements that come from someone who's an emotionally intelligent person, right? So to go back to to where we started, I think that, you know, the key to listening is to listen. It's just to kind of be there with active presence, which is, it's a word we hear a lot these days, right? And even that can become a buzzword. If someone said, well, what is presence? I'd say, look, none of these things, none of these concepts are that far out there and that overcomplicated. No. It's just actively giving somebody else your attention and listening. And in some instances, maybe you're going to ask some questions, or you're going to follow up and you're going to acknowledge them and show them that you care. I'll finish. I know it's a little bit of a longer rant here. I apologize, but I'll figure, you know, one of my absolute favorite quotes in life came from a great American president, Theodore Roosevelt. And he said, you know, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's the other way that I define empathy, I think, in a lot of ways. Someone said, what is empathy? I said, well, people don't really know, you know, people don't really care what you have to say. And when you really boil it down, they don't really care until they know how much you're interested, invested, and caring about them. And then see how far your words go. Then see how far your actions go. And so that's always resonated with me.
I just have to add a little thing here, because you mentioned Theodore Roosevelt, and my favorite poem of all time is The Man in the Arena, which is obviously his presentation or his speech. And fantastic. And someone who speaks a lot around connection is Brené Brown, and she's a big fan of that particular poem as well. I wanted to ask you, because what you've given me, again, a lovely series of threads that I can pull upon, much like a loose thread in a jumper. It's just choosing which thread to pull on and see where we explore. But you've given me a couple of really good ins here, and I wanted to talk a little bit about decision making, because you've mentioned the four elements there. And I wanted to ask you about EQ and decision making, because I understand empathy, I understand listening, I understand all of those things, and you're quite right. And what I really appreciate about your perspective is, let's not overcomplicate things, let's keep it as it is. But I do want to explore a little bit about EQ and decision making. How do we best make decisions that are emotionally intelligent? How do we make decisions for the greater good? How do we make decisions that are going to serve as many people as we can? And how do we make decisions that don't lose sight of our own objectives? You know, we can be busy serving others, and how do we make sure we balance those too? So I'm wondering if you've got any thoughts around that.
When I think of decision-making in terms of the emotional intelligence aspect of it, I really do believe that it's self-awareness informing self-management. And so what is self-awareness? Well, I talk about having a game plan. I talked a little bit in the beginning about values. For me, what that game plan is, on a very fundamental personal level, it's your passion, values, purpose, mission, and goals. When you're really clear and firm in who you are, what you stand for, what matters to you, and then also how you're then going to go plan about trying to achieve success and setting goals to get the results that you want. You know, that carries over from not just a personal level, but to a professional level. I think that can be the same thing that goes into a project or an initiative or a major endeavor for a business or for, you know. So I think when you're very clear on your strengths, your skills, your talents, you're just very aware of who you are and what you can achieve, it does a couple things. Obviously, that's self-awareness, right? Builds a lot of confidence, helps you to then execute. Because what, for me, self-management is, yes, the regulation side, that's the ability to manage our emotions in the face of maybe negative emotions like fear and anxiety, or positive emotions such as, you know, awe and wonder and excitement. I mean, sometimes we think exclusively about regulating or managing negative. It's also about positive. But the components of self-management, I think, that go into really making smart decisions are, you know, how efficiently we do it, how we manage our time, how we balance and add all the different components that go into a decision together, and we analyze and measure those things. We balance them out to determine what is or what isn't objectively right in this situation for the best needs of our business, the best needs of our practice. You know, I just think having more of an all-encompassing approach that is rooted in a rock-solid foundation, that's how you make great decisions.
Yeah. Chris, you are a keynote speaker. You get to speak to lots of different audiences across a variety of different industries. And indeed, I know you've spoken to dentists in the past as well. Whether it's dentists or otherwise, What are the things that surprise you most? What are the things that get you scratching your head when it comes to EQ and emotional intelligence?
Few people really understand it beyond the more superficial level.
Hmm.
I'm sure like you, there's things that you're doing every day that to you, it's just, sometimes if you don't even think about it, you might just think, oh my God, that's what I do every day. Right. And I think I live in this world every day. So it's kind of twofold. It's there are a lot of people who believe in it, who will still tell you that it's a buzzword, which I think by even using that term diminishes the credibility of it. I think buzzword to me almost has a negative connotation to it. Right. So it
sounds transient a bit to me.
Yeah. And so I think that it's, there are a lot of people who I think understand it on a superficial level, but don't understand how to use it to their advantage. So my objective, just in terms of the speaking work, it was everything that went into my book. I mean, and I always tell people when people come to me and they say, hey, we're interested in hiring you for that. I say, look, I'm going to tell you what it is and I'm going to tell you why it matters, but I'm most vested in how do you use this to your advantage. I'm just much more about the practical side of this incredibly powerful skill set that really covers and encompasses many, many, many things. And I'm also quick to point out that, I think a lot of people were talking about and writing about and speaking about emotional intelligence before we knew it as emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. I think it really is the aggregate of a lot of different soft skill sets. But that said, I also think the research of what became emotional intelligence, further emphasizing the importance of things like self-motivation and empathy, but deeply getting to know ourselves. I think if nothing else, what really came from the victory about self-awareness becoming more prominent in society is that much more of a quest to deeply get to know ourselves. Could come from meditation. It just could come from reflection and journaling and having time to ourselves, having a truly powerful thought life that a lot of great philosophers, people like Emerson and others have talked about over the years. And I'm always quick to talk about it in that way. So here you go, Jesse. You got me on a tangent here. I apologize for that.
No, I love a good tangent, mate. You keep going as hard and as fast as you like. I'm good with that.
The second part of it, which I would speak to, is not as directly, but more indirectly related. So I'm used to speaking to examples of people who I think exemplify emotional intelligence in business.
Yeah.
And I'm always surprised, and some of this may or may not travel well, literally and figuratively, in terms of, maybe for folks in the Australian audience may not potentially be as familiar with certain, American businessmen or entrepreneurs or things like that, and vice versa, of course. But, I'm quick to reference examples of, very successful business people, like Sarah Blakely is someone who's a very successful CEO and entrepreneur, one of the billionaire businesswoman. And I'll bring up examples
she's the
of
Spanx. She's the Spanx lady.
She's the CEO and founder of Spanx, and just a really, really, really successful businesswoman, influencer on LinkedIn. So she is, a very well-known person, but I'm just using her as an example. We could rattle off, I'm sure, many, many other people that we've observed, maybe that we've met or that we've seen on television or that we've seen in business. And I'll sometimes list people as examples to audiences and I'll get, foggy look in their faces if they've, and that surprises me, right? I think that's the other thing, right? Anytime we're talking about a skill set or someone who models, high character, or it could just be who are people that we want to emulate. So there's the skill set and there's the, this is how you become more emotionally intelligent. It's this very accessible skill set that you can work on every single day. And I think some people don't realize that. I think the other part of it is here are all of these great examples of people that have literally modeled emotional intelligence about as well as anybody could in business, in sport, in whatever, in a number of different mediums. And sometimes I'll reference people that I'm so used to and so familiar to speaking to and learning about and get a blank stare back, which is, I have no idea who you're talking about. And I'm thinking, that's one of the most successful business people in the world.
So. I think a lot of Australians would know Sarah Blakely, and they would certainly be aware of the company Spanx. Can I ask, what is it that you see that she manifests so well? What is it as she models emotional intelligence, how does that show up? What does it look like in her particular circumstances?
someone, you know, I think that had an incredibly powerful work ethic, does have an incredibly powerful work ethic. So, you know, does that necessarily mean emotional intelligence? Self-management, maybe. Yeah, I think it does. But unbelievable motivation to do what she did. So she took skills that she learned in selling door to door. I think she was selling, you know, copiers and things like that at the early stage of her career. And so she kind of took all of these qualities and things about herself. She talked about all these different lessons that she learned from her father about, you know, who she was and why that mattered, and a great work ethic fueled with motivation. And the more I read about her, the more I could just see this person that was so unbelievably self-motivated, was refusing failure, was deeply aware of what she did well and what she needed other people to support her in. I wrote about her in the book as being very much a pace-setting leadership. She really brought other pace-setting leader. She brought other people along with her in terms of actually modeling hard work, motivation, deep self-awareness, a commitment to time management and efficiency. And the last but not least thing, which is probably last but most, is very empathetic. What do I mean by that? In order for her product to truly succeed and excel, she wanted to understand the voice of the customer. So what she did was she actually went into department stores and listened to what women were actually wanting as a product. She took that input, traveled from where she was living in Atlanta, Georgia at the time, up to these textile and hosiery mills in North Carolina, bargained with manufacturers there to actually make her product, and then told them exactly how to make it, based on the feedback that she heard from prospective customers about what they actually wanted. And what would, I mean, I can't really think of too many more brilliant business stories than that. I mean, she listened, she understood what people needed, and you know, had some of those needs of her own, right? I mean, that's what fueled the passion to want to do what she did. And so I think I could just go on about the social skill, the way that she communicated and how she needed to build relationships for the supply chain for her company. So she just, all around, someone that had incredible vision, motivation, and really knew what she was about and had a plan to get there.
That's really interesting. And again, just for our audience listening around that, there's some really strong parallels between that and dentistry. And I will come back and ask you about other business leaders in a moment. But in dentistry, we are sitting literally across the table or across the chair from a person, and we get to have that conversation, that feedback every day. We get to see our customers every day. We don't have to travel from Atlanta, Georgia to another place to see where our customers are because they come to us. But what I'm really picking up on there was that deep sense of listening, that deep understanding of the customer, that deep understanding of what issue or problem she was looking to solve. And she built a business around that. And again, ladies and gents, in our audience here who are dentists, that is exactly what we talk about when we're talking about fireside chats, new patient exams, all those sorts of things, is to really, really listen. But it's also what I think is interesting, and this comes back to what we spoke about earlier. It's about not just listening to the words that are said. I think good listening goes beyond the words. It's about understanding what's really going on, what's not being spoken. And I imagine Sarah Blakely has that skill as well, to take what she's hearing, but to go deeper and really understand what's happening at an emotional level for her customers. Do you think that's a fair comment as well?
Undeniably so. And I know we talked a little bit about body language and just that recognition, which, you know, it's just ironic, right? We're doing this over video, of course. And so much of the work that I do these days is over video, but for you and for other, you know, practitioners, you're right there in person. And while we can read body language over video, we certainly can't over a phone call, but it's that much easier in person. There's an art and a nuance to that. You know, how we pick up on fear. I mean, we talked even before, you know, just when someone's coming into a dentist, so I'm trying to put myself in those shoes. If I'm coming in, if I'm having, you know, a procedure done, it could be a root canal or a crown or a cavity done, and don't get on me too hard, but I'm going back in for a cavity next week. And
that's cool.
These days, no. But when I was younger or you know, there was more fear. But we don't know. The point is, you never know where someone is coming from. And I alluded earlier to saying, you know, there might be things that you and I do every single day that to us, it's pardon the pun, like brushing our teeth or washing our hands. But, you know, someone else, they're maybe coming into your office once a year or twice a year, or maybe they haven't even been to the dentist in 3 years. So think about that and try to put yourself from an empathetic standpoint in that individual's shoes. They don't know what to expect. And, you know, I guess if you really thought about it, they'd probably say, well, yeah, you know, I want to be made to feel comfortable. I want to be treated with respect and kindness. You know, I want to feel at ease. So what can we do? Well, in that situation, if you're running a practice, you can try to understand from a body language standpoint, what are some of the telltale signs of fear or anxiety?
Yep.
What are those signs of maybe someone looks overwhelmed or someone looks scared? You know, maybe they're not speaking as much or they're not making eye contact. You know, there's a lot of different things that really through research that to me is social skill.
Mm.
And we talked in the beginning about the five pillars of emotional intelligence. I'll repeat them one more time. So social skill, motivation, empathy, self-awareness, and then self-management or self-regulation. But that to me is social skill, right? It's that art and nuance of recognizing and understanding a situation and then aiming to influence it in a way that could have any number of positive outcomes, either for you or for the individual that you're dealing with.
Mm. So I wanted to talk a little bit about self-management as well. I highlighted that to come back to. So again, thank you for the segue, because self-management is obviously going to include some things such as impulse control and other things of that nature. And sometimes as a dentist, you know, we deal with people really honestly who quite often don't want to be there. And if I had a dollar for every time someone said, no offense, doc, but you know, I don't want to be here or whatever it is. And sometimes, you know, when you're dealing with your own stuff, it's easy to slip out of emotional intelligence and lose that self-management and to perhaps respond in a way that may not be helpful or may not be as good as it could be. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about, I guess, if we're trying to be kind to ourselves, how do we recognize when we're perhaps not at our best and then equally get back on the right track? Because I was telling you the story off air that I'd had someone say to me on one occasion, no offense, doc, I don't want to be here. And I must have been having perhaps a suboptimal day, pretty poor day, bad day. And I think I responded with something to the effect of, well, no offense, I probably don't want you to be here either, or something stupid, or maybe it was, no offense, but I don't want to be here either, or whatever it is. I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was a sharp response that was unnecessary. It was unhelpful. It was unprofessional. And it wasn't really what I felt. I don't know why I said it. I was being a smart aleck.
Yeah, and perhaps even an attempt at humor, right? And sometimes even something like that, we don't know how it's going to be interpreted by the other individual for some reason. You know, maybe I think something relatively innocuous, right? But you don't always know how someone else is going to take something like that. And so, you know, something actually, you know, just even hearing you describe, you know, that really popped into my mind is just, you know, I think there's an element of self-management that really has an art and understanding like of ego.
Mm.
Of not injecting ourselves too much into the equation of kind of, you know, things like that, like what you just described. You know, there's part of me that hears that and thinks, if I'm getting on a coaching call with a client, right? Or if I were showing up at a speaking engagement for a company and I walked by on my way to the stage and I heard someone say, oh God, I'd rather not be here. I mean, there's an element of us that we're human beings. We're almost going to take a little bit of offense to that, right? But I think that it's almost like keeping our ego in check. It's almost like I'm just going to let that one wash right off of me and go downstream and keep the big picture in mind. And that to me is I don't know if this is the perfect answer, but I just self-awareness fuels self-management. Self-management doesn't exist without self-awareness. And if you're comfortable in your own skin and you know that in a situation like that, there's just no gain. There's no gain to something like that. And look, God knows how many of those mistakes I've made, right? But, you know, we learn from those things. And if we're able to, in that moment, and that's the other last thing I think that is important to say, maybe the most important thing I could say here about self-management is take a step back. There are some situations in life that we need to respond or react almost immediately. But very often we have the ability to pull back for a second or two and be quick thinking on our feet and think, yeah, well, maybe I'm not going to say that now. Yeah, well, no, it's nevertheless, it's good to have you here. you know, that one second pause and in situations like that, I think we're trying, you know, when we know our objective is to try to make somebody feel that they're going to have the best possible experience when they come into our quote unquote office, so to speak, mm-hmm. what are all of the things that are going to comprise that experience for that individual and how would you communicate it?
I really just want to pick up on the 1 second pause thing, because that's something that I had to learn as I got older and more experienced as a dentist and more experienced indeed as a human being, is that the power of that pause and not feeling the need to respond in the moment and just to give yourself that little bit of a break. So that episode I told you about where, you know, I was a bit smart alecky, yeah, that was a long time ago now. And I reflect, and it's really funny, isn't it? Because I, even though it was so long ago, you know, 20 years ago, maybe now, it still brings up that sense of, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. That's horrible. I still feel this, I can feel myself angsting about it even now. But I think what I've learned and what you've just highlighted, and I want to emphasize for people listening, is the ability to just have that little momentary pause before you respond. And I think that's really very, very helpful. And this is not really now it's my turn to go off on a tangent for a second, Chris. And that is one of the reasons why I'm less active on social media than I used to be as well, in the sense that it was so easy to see the keyboard warriors kind of, and I'm not talking about just not dentistry necessarily, but just generally across the board. And I found that, you know, I might have something to say, but equally, I've also learned that I don't need to see that. I don't need to participate in that conversation. I don't need to do that. And I guess from that self-awareness and self-management point of view, sometimes it's about extricating yourself from a situation rather than managing it as well. So do you feel there's a place for just removing yourself from situations from time to time?
Yeah. I mean, no question about it. Sometimes the best thing is not to say anything at all, right? Or maybe the best thing is not to act on something if we're emotionally worked up. And, you know, easier said than done. I mean, I think, and one of the benefits that I have, you know, I feel, spent most of my career in business. I was working in the consulting world. I was you know, working as a full-time employee, but, you know, being an entrepreneur for the last several years, you know, I have that benefit of, you know, not necessarily being in that environment. I'm able to step back out in the work that I do, and find time for perspective. And that's the word that I would use. It's really, it's finding time for perspective, putting things in perspective. Again, why I'm so big on values, why I'm so big on a grounding and a foundation of purpose, of things like that. And because true emotional intelligence is being able to feel like you know, when it comes to what we're talking about right now, it's being able to have an anchor in the middle of a storm. And how do we have that? We have that by deeply knowing ourselves, by having rock solid values and things like honesty, integrity, trust, faith, hope, perseverance, courage, you know, having things like that, that we can always turn back to and say, these are my hallmarks. This is what makes me who I am. And I know that if I don't act in accordance with those values, and if I don't behave and comport myself in a way that is in alignment with what I really want other people to see about me and what I want to be for myself, even when no one's looking. That for me is how I see that correlation between awareness and behavior, with the art and the nuance of knowing that the winds are going to blow and the winds of change are going to blow, and they're going to get us negatively emotionally thinking and positively emotionally thinking. The eternal question is, how will you respond?
I think it is absolutely a key thing. So the stimulus, whatever happens, and the response will often be how people perceive you and how we perceive ourselves. And I think if we can be mindful of that response, and if that means putting a little bit of space between yourself and that response, or indeed not interacting with some things, I think that that's a good thing. And again, one of the beauties of getting gray hair is you learn some of these things as you get a bit older. And so I'm hoping for the younger members listening to this podcast, we can just shortcut that experience for them. No need to, you know, have to live through that. Chris, we've covered a lot of territory today. I do have one or two things I'd like to ask you around this, because I'm always interested in the people and the journey and the experiences that they've gleaned over the years. And obviously you've spent the last significant part of your working life engaged in emotional intelligence. But I wanted to ask you, on a personal note, what led you to this work? Because it's not necessarily something that you're going to sit down as your high school student thinking, hey, guess what? This is my career. I'm 17 or 16. I'm going to work, spend my days researching, thinking, writing, teaching about emotional intelligence. My observation of humans is that sometimes we get into a field of work to solve our own questions, or to at least answer our own questions. And I'm curious to ask if you had any questions of your own around that space growing up.
No question about it. Absolutely. You know, someone that I'm very open in saying that, you know, I think like anybody, right? I think there's many people that, you know, you deal with anxiety, or you fear becoming the person that you really want to be, or, you know, we think about the negative side, or we're dealing with stress management, or for example, but, you know, for someone like me, I'm an extrovert. I've become interestingly more introverted as I've gotten older. And I think I'm sure COVID has had an awful lot to do with the last coming up on almost 14 months here of being that. But I almost kind of jokingly these days refer to myself as like an introverted extrovert. But I am a true extrovert in terms of when I think of the different things in my life that have given me tremendous energy and just reason for being, so to speak. It's been being around other people. It's been, you know, sinking my teeth into activities that are my true passion. And so, you know, I've known that in those situations, and that's why I say, I know I'm repeating myself, but we're so quick to think about, well, EQ is really on a more fundamental personal level, how we handle negative emotions. Well, no, it's also how we handle positive emotions. I mean, if we're going to always be overcome with excitement or passion or joy, or just, you know, overwhelmed in certain instances, especially in a professional context with very, very positive things, we can lose focus on the task at hand. You know, we can lose discipline, for example, for how we want to behave and comport ourselves in front of clients or things like that. But yeah, I mean, I think back to the different stages of my life, you know, having played basketball in high school and college. And I wrote about this in my first book. You know, when I went to college, my high school coach sent me a card about attitude. And he said, Chris, you have all the tools to be a great college player. He said, but what you're going to find is that for where you are now, even though you see bigger, you know, faster, stronger guys around you, he said, it's actually going to be much more up here in your brain, you know, much more up here in your head, how you handle yourself mentally and emotionally on the court, as opposed to just the physical ability to pick up a basketball and shoot it or make a great pass or things like that. And then, of course, the same could be said for any sport, right? And I have some thoughts maybe to share off the air about some tennis players that come to mind, if you will, and I won't say any names. But, you know, I think from an athletic standpoint, that manifested itself in my life. Yeah. It manifested itself in my business career. I noticed that while I like to believe that I'm a very smart person, right? I wasn't necessarily the smartest person in the room, but my ability to read situations, my ability to identify with people. And the more I learned about myself through different personality-based assessments, but just through the school of hard knocks of going through adversity. And that's the last part of what I would share is that, you know, yeah, I mean, I just going back to earlier stages of my own career. I mean, I know what it's like to be let go from a job. You know, I know what it's like to not, you know, become who you thought you wanted to become as an athlete, or as, you know, in it, when you were in a specific job and you thought, this is the path that I'm going to be going on. But, you know, as I pivoted and moved forward, I maybe realized, well, actually, I hadn't yet done the work to really truly figure out who I wanted to become. Mm. So, you know, I think there's elements of my own personal journey in there. And I've been keen to point out over the last several years that, you know, certainly some of the writing that I've done on a more personal level, feel like, and yeah, to some degree, maybe was writing to myself a little bit there. And I was writing to that younger version of myself that, you know, I think great writers, and again, I'm not trying to slyly pat myself on the back there, but I think a lot of, you know, great communicators are very good at, in a way, almost talking to themselves. And then that message can maybe have a lot of application to others. And so it's really, we're going to be most deeply and intimately versed on elements of our own story. And then we can kind of give that gift to other people. Because guess what? There might be a lot of common threads in my story as there are in yours.
Absolutely. And that was the whole preface of the question, in the sense that my observation is as well, people who go into that sort of work usually have something going on in their own life that they can share and share the lessons and the experience with others. And hence the reason I wanted to ask you that question. Chris, just one last question that I'd love to run past you. As I said, you've been really generous with your time and really generous with your expertise. And you've been very generous in indulging me as I've zigged and zagged on various tangents, because it's an interesting topic. And I feel like we could probably talk for 3 days on this and not even scratch the surface. But what I really wanted to try and do, and this is an ambitious question. It's an ambitious question because it's a reductionist question, meaning that there's this huge topic and I've just said that we could spend 3 days talking about it and we're not going to scratch the surface, and yet I'm going to ask you to try and encapsulate a couple of key thoughts. And if we were to have the gospel according to Chris, if we had a billboard out on your local golf course surrounded by alligators, you know, whatever else, or not. But in any event, if we were to, you know, try and capture a few key thoughts that we could leave the audience with to either ponder or to take action upon, or things just to consider as they go about their day-to-day work, building teams, dealing with patients, all those sorts of things, what would be a handful of thoughts that you'd like to leave people with?
Yeah, you know, look, sometimes repetition is an important thing. So emotional intelligence is the ability to recognize, understand, and manage our emotions, which to me, that's what self-awareness is. Mm. And it's the ability to recognize, understand, and then influence the emotions of other people. And I think there's a lot of elements in there of social skill, of empathy, of self-management. It is a skill set that every one of us can improve and work on every single day. It is not exclusive to age, race, you know, it doesn't discriminate on any of those things, right? Gender, et cetera. So it's something that everyone can acquire. And so, you know, I think maybe what I would even just finish with is just, you know, partially related to the last question that you just asked. I'm so drawn to this subject and always will be, because if you really do believe that it is within your reach to acquire the skill set and improve upon it every single day, I mean, that to me is at the essence of living a very human life that is aimed towards self-improvement. Mm-hmm. And I believe, you know, I kind of believe in EQ as much as I believe the sky is blue, because I've seen its powerful effect in my own life in terms of my ability to grow as a businessman. I have 3 very young children who often leave me very sleep deprived. And so, and you know, in my marriage, right, it is the other thing. It's personal and it's professional. And there's so much virtue in it. And if you have a curiosity to genuinely grow and get better each day for yourself, for the people you lead, for your customers, for your own employees, it's the way to go. And I would just encourage you to almost tease to say, begin the journey, begin the quest to learn more about what it is and why it matters. Mm. But once you get on that road, you're going to be that much more curious to actually learn, how do I use it to my advantage? And that to me is what I make my living doing these days. It's what I love to do and what I'm always trying to learn, you know, better insights on to inform and help others.
Fantastic. It's like going up Maslow's hierarchy of needs, higher towards the self-actualization, and that is a quest for all of us. Ladies and gents, if you want to find out more about Chris's work, please do head across to his website, chrisdconnors.com. You can find him on LinkedIn. You can find him on Medium, so chrisdconnors.medium.com, where he's written a ton of articles. Mm-hmm. And as I said in the introduction, his work has been featured all over the place. So go and check it out in all those places. But for now, please also go to the website, tap into the resources there, grab a hold of the books, and begin your own journey around emotional intelligence. Because as Chris has said, it's a rich journey, it's a rewarding journey, and it's a very human journey. And I think that's ultimately what we're all about, is to create not just a business that we love, but a life that we love as well. So Chris, thanks so much for sharing your insights, your thoughts, your wisdom to help people on that quest.
Thank you, Jesse. Appreciate you having me.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.